From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, welcome to this edition of Washington Watch, the Friday edition. This is not Tony, it's Eben Fowler. I'm with Bot Radio Network, and I have the privilege once again of sitting in for Tony this afternoon. Not only for Tony, but also Russ Jones, because Russ is the usual Friday guy, and he's heading to his 40th high school reunion in Kansas City, which is right where I'm sitting. So, Russ, thanks for the opportunity to drop in again. Well, as usual, there's a lot of stuff going on, and even this afternoon, I was out at lunch trying to listen to some of the news stories to keep up with it because it keeps changing so fast. And we've got a full broadcast for you today. In fact, here's what we're going to be talking about. On the heels of President Trump's return from the NATO summit, the president is on his first official visit to the United Kingdom, meeting with Prime Minister Theresa May and having tea with the Queen. It's apparent he's shaking up Europe, asking for more funding. We're going to be talking with Representative Vicky Hartzler of Missouri in just a few moments, and we'll get her thoughts about this and a number of other things going on. Well, there were plenty of fireworks and raised voices during FBI agent Peter Strzok's testimony yesterday. We'll be talking with Representative Steve Russell from Oklahoma. He was there, and he'll give us an inside look. And interestingly enough, I'm going to compare Peter Strzok's testimony with a root canal. You won't want to miss that. Well, maybe you've heard about the rise of facial recognition technology. It's said it could change the way we live. But just how dangerous could it be? And how can it be used to catch the bad guys, terrorists, MS-13 gang members? We'll talk with author and privacy expert Todd McNutt later in the program. And we'll take your calls toward the end of the show. We'll be talking about any of the topics that we cover today. So if you hear something in the first couple of segments and you just have got to talk about it, hang on to that question, wait for the number, and we will talk with you about it in the last segment of the broadcast. Well, President Trump and First Lady Melania received a warm welcome at Blenheim Palace as the president launched his three-day visit to the United Kingdom. His stopover comes as he rattled NATO members, demanding their countries carry more financial weight. With us now is Representative Vicky Hartzler. She represents the 4th Congressional District in Missouri, and she serves on the House Armed Services Committee. Vicky, how are you today?
I'm great, Eben. Good to visit with you.
It's good to talk with you. It seems like the only time we talk is on this broadcast because you're busy, I'm busy, but we are glad that you could take some time out of your schedule today. And we have so many different things to talk about. So first of all, congratulations. I understand you were recently named by Speaker Paul Ryan as a conferee on the Conference Committee for the FY19 National Defense Authorization Act. What does that mean?
Well, I have the privilege of representing the House's position on our defense bill as we meet with our Senate counterparts to craft the legislation that I feel like is the most important thing that we do in Congress, and that is to provide for the common defense and to make sure our men and women in uniform have what they need. And this legislation, every year we've passed it 58 years in a row, authorizes the spending for everything from bullets to body armor to airplanes, to pay for our troops and making sure they have what we need to meet any threat that we may face as a nation.
Well, I understand. And actually, I talked with a couple of service members recently who had actually experienced some of the drawdown that occurred in the last 8 years and, again, during the Obama administration. And there were, it was just their perspective and just was astounded at how much reduction had taken place. Would you agree that that was the case?
Oh, absolutely. It was devastating. It really was. We have about 120,000 less troops that they drew down, and that's why we've been fighting for several years now to increase those numbers back up. We got increased funding the last 2 years for defense, and we're starting to bring those numbers back. But The President Obama's policies just decimated our readiness. We had 80 individuals killed last year just in training accidents alone. We had 21 who died through actual combat. And while any death is tragic, it is especially hard to justify 80 individuals dying just through training, through their equipment failing. And we owe it to our men and women in uniform, to their families, to make sure that if they sign up and put their name on the line and their life on the line, that their equipment is going to work and that they will be able to come home safely to us. So that's why this bill that we are negotiating the final stages with our Senate counterparts is so important, because it does increase the troop levels. It does start buying more planes and more aircraft and more surveillance equipment, and has a 2.6% pay increase for our troops that is so needed. And we start to address the training shortfalls, the readiness, and rebuild our military, which is just vital.
Just one more question along this line before we jump into some of these other topics. But how do you, and this is a really tough question to answer, I'm sure, but how do you determine what is the right size for the military? Obviously, it hasn't been for a while, just because of some of the inability to take care of a number of issues around the globe. But how do you determine when you're at the right size? Not too big, not too small.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is something that the Secretary Mattis puts together in the Defense Department, has come out as the National Defense Strategy. And that hadn't been written for several years. And under his leadership, we now have that new document again. And that is kind of the basis for it. In that document that the public can read, the unclassified version, it lays out both the threats and then what we need to address those threats. And, of course, you cannot count on every contingency. The enemy is always going to do something maybe you don't anticipate. But you can kind of look at the world as it is now and the intelligence that we have regarding our adversaries, and make some predictions on if they were to attack or to do something. Do we have enough soldiers? Is their training adequate? Do we have enough airplanes in the Air Force? Those sorts of things. Make those calculations and then base those funding requests on that. And that's the approach that we are taking now. It's the way anybody would run their business is they do the plan, then they follow the plan, and that's where we're going. I feel good about the direction. It's going to take several years to get where we need to be to rebuild this readiness, but at least we are aware of the shortfalls. We have a president in the White House who is supportive of rebuilding our military, and we're moving that direction.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think has kind of gone under the radar to some extent, and it's because, you know, the media in general are spending so much time trying to tear down the current administration. You know, when there's a success, it's rarely celebrated in most of the media. And one of those things, we heard about it, but we don't hear too much about it, that I think points to probably the wisdom of people like Secretary Mattis and the way he's running things, is that we're not hearing so much about things like ISIS anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's something that, you're right, is the media is totally ignoring, but it is huge. We have basically decimated them in their so-called caliphate that they declared just a few years ago, wanted to form their own country and use that as a basis to basically take over the world in their view. And they're pretty much gone out of Iraq and Syria. Now they are metastasizing and popping up in other places of the world. We're seeing that they had an insurgency in the southern island of the Philippines last year for a couple of months, took over the capital of that island, and the Philippine Army, with our assistance, was able to gain that back. And so, you know, they're going to continue their activity of ISIS in Afghanistan as well as Africa. So they're not totally going to go away. But that was a huge victory that now Iraq is able to, once again, those people can go back into their communities and start rebuilding their homes and their lives. And it's come a long ways from when they initially were killing people, cutting off their heads, burning people alive, and just terrorizing the Middle East.
Well, it's an amazing change. Well, let's turn the corner here and talk about President Trump's visit to England. He said his meeting with President Vladimir Putin next week may be the easiest part of his European tour. And we heard today, I believe it was, that Rod Rosenstein announced the indictment of, I think, 12 Russians with respect to tampering or an attempt to tamper with the election. And now I heard early this afternoon that Senator Chuck Schumer has essentially asked or called for the president to call off his meeting with Putin. Let's play a little clip. This is during a press conference earlier today in the United Kingdom. The president says he will ask President Vladimir Putin about Moscow's meddling in the 2016 election. Bobby, roll that clip.
I know you'll ask, will we be talking about meddling? And I will absolutely bring that up. I don't think you'll have any, I did it, you got me. There won't be a Perry Mason here, I don't think, but you never know what happens, right? But I will absolutely, firmly ask the question. And hopefully we'll have a very good relationship with Russia.
Okay, Representative Hartsley, tell us how you think the president has done at this NATO meeting. And with all these discussions about, and again, in the media, a lot of crowing about how he's confronting these countries and ruining our relationships with our European allies and so forth. What are your thoughts?
Well, the president does have a very different approach, a very direct approach, which, you know, may make some people uncomfortable, but it is working. Clearly, what was the approach of the past, which was indirect and just behind closed doors, asking them to please increase their defense spending, didn't work. These nations, and they're our closest allies, we all agreed together that we need to stand together, we need to have a strong defense to be able to deter a nation like Russia from being aggressive. And but yet they haven't been fulfilling their agreement of having 2% of their having their budget for their defense match 2% of their GDP, and we have been carrying the main load, and we don't even live next to Russia. So they have certainly an interest, I would think, in being able to have a robust national defense that could fend off any attack that may come and certainly be a deterrent to Putin doing anything. So, you know, I think Trump is getting results since he first raised this issue publicly last year. Those nations have stepped up and already infused more than $30 billion extra money, and several of them are, have committed to move towards as quickly as possible, fulfilling their obligations. And that's what's needed. So I think we should look at results, and, you know, these conversations are difficult, especially when they're among family. It's kind of awkward, but you know, they need to invest more, and it looks like that's the direction they're going. Now, with his meeting with Putin, I one thing that I feel confident of is that President Trump will not be hoodwinked by Putin. He is a shrewd negotiator. He will go in there with eyes wide open. He knows what Putin's capabilities are and what he, you know, can do. And I think he'll have a very frank discussion with him, too. And sometimes it's good to look at your adversary and say, I know what you know, and, you know, you're not going to get by with it. So we'll see.
We've got just about a minute here. Let's change gears again. When Congress created the Title X Family Planning Program about 50 years ago, it was never intended to subsidize the abortion industry. A quick comment on what HHS is doing in terms of stopping taxpayer funding, and then we'll have to say goodbye.
Sure. I'm so encouraged by having a pro-life administration running HHS, which has proposed rules to make sure that Planned Parenthood does not get these family planning money. The comment period is open. I encourage everyone who is interested and supportive of this to weigh in and go on the HHS website and leave a comment supporting it. It's a great opportunity to defund them of $60 million.
Absolutely. Representative Vicki Hartzler from the 4th Congressional District of Missouri, thanks for joining us this afternoon. Coming up next, shootout at the OK Corral, or shall we say Capitol Hill, between lawmakers and disgraced FBI agent Peter Strzok. That's coming up next on Washington Watch.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
I want to know what it meant, Agent Strzok.
It would be his candidacy.
The will is the American people. Is that right? That's your testimony. The will stop it. You were speaking on behalf of the American people.
I don't recall writing that text.
Are you denying writing the text?
What I can tell you is that text in no way suggested that I or the FBI would take any action to influence the candidacy
Agent Strzok, that is a fantastic answer to a question nobody asked.
Yep.
Well, lots of fireworks on Capitol Hill yesterday as FBI agent Peter Strzok admitted he doesn't much care for President Trump, but also insisted that his personal political views, which are very obvious based on text messages, such things as promising to, quote, stop President Trump or facilitate his impeachment, didn't influence two of the country's most important investigations, both of which he was working on at a very high level. Now, I told you I was going to compare Peter Strzok's testimony to a root canal, and I really mean that. Yesterday afternoon, I was at the endodontist's office, reclining in a chair for about an hour and a half, and they were very nice to allow me to watch the ongoing hearings as they worked on the root canal. The first one I've ever had, and I have to tell you that Peter Strzok's testimony was more irritating than the root canal. That's just my personal experience. Well, joining us now, somebody who was actually in the room, not laying in a dentist chair, was Congressman Steve Russell. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Oklahoma and serves on the House Committee on Government Oversight and the House Armed Services Committee. He was part of yesterday's hearings, and he can tell us what it was like in that room. Welcome back to Washington Watch, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Evan. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, just point blank, what are your thoughts about Strzok's testimony?
I think the thing that was striking to me really were two things. He insisted that he had no bias, was adamant that he had no bias. And then the other thing was he talked about how his behaviors, even with the text, didn't violate any of the FBI procedures or guidelines on political free speech. And both of those things are simply not the case. When you look at the statements, of course, every American listening to them finds it disingenuous that he would have no bias. I even quoted from Luke 6 yesterday, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. But whether or not it influenced, regardless of his assertions, the department, uh, uh, the of the Inspector General, Inspector General Horowitz, the head of it. In the last hearing that we had, he stated clearly that while there was no bias found with the prosecutors, he said that Mr. Strzok himself clearly had a mindset of bias, and that they also had to conclude that it did affect his decisions with the Wiener laptop case and releasing that information with regard to the classified emails and other things that were done. So his assertions notwithstanding, the Inspector General came to completely different conclusions. And what's important about that is the assertions were being made that there was no bias in the IG report. That is only applicable to the prosecutors of the FBI, not those feeding the information and investigations.
It was, you know, I think probably most of our listeners have read or heard some of the text exchanges, many, many, many text exchanges between Strzok and his girlfriend. And you would have to be living in suspended reality to not, I mean, anybody with any sense whatsoever, if you just look at that objectively, there's just no way that you can't say that that there's bias there in the strongest possible terms. And as I watched that, I watched about an hour and a half of that testimony. I saw somebody who, you know, I almost wonder if he was somehow compartmentalizing his brain from reality, seriously. And he was also quite arrogant. He smirked a lot. I mean, that's just kind of part of the way he presented himself.
You mean, we all appreciate the fact that you're facing 70 members of Congress. So, okay, that we understand that. When people will react in different ways. But I think what was not believable was for him to insist that he had done nothing wrong. I think in the case of him talking about the Department of Justice ethical guidelines, he clearly violated it in terms of what can be sent and what can be done on official devices, what can be done during work time. He framed it up as political opinion. Okay, that's fine on your personal devices or different things. But in the case of FBI agents, he clearly violated the FBI's Office of Offense Code and Penalty Guidelines, so much so that Inspector General Horowitz had referred both Strzok and Page and other agents involved who were unnamed over to the FBI for adjudication for violations of that. So his assertion saying that, he could disagree with it all he wants, but glossing over the IG report, which many attempted to do on the other side of the aisle, mischaracterizing that report is simply not the case. And why does any of this matter? I mean, people at home going, well, you know what? This, that, and the other people have. Okay, I get all of that. This is the FBI.
That's right.
The FBI, not only was it an agent, it was a senior official at the FBI who was in charge of the nation's most sensitive investigations dealing with the highest powers of leadership in the country. And our law enforcement agencies, we give great responsibility to. They wield tremendous power. And that only happens with a high level of trust, and he clearly violated that.
Absolutely. We have just about a minute left, Steve. Were there any new revelations yesterday, in your view?
Well, one important thing was how information came from Fusion GPS and the dossier, which we know now to be funded by the Democratic Party. And so as we look at how that came, it came through, some of it handed through a judge. And to his spouse, who worked for Fusion GPS, that was a confirmation that the FBI had not made before until yesterday.
Well, I think it's interesting. Who knows what's going to happen with Mr. Strzok? Personally, I think he should be booted out of the FBI and not get any retirement. His behavior is despicable, but that's just my view. And I'm sure that there will be consequences eventually. Well, Representative Russell, thank you so much for your time today. Appreciate you taking the time to share your observations. Well, coming up next, new facial recognition technology is raising privacy concerns. We're going to be talking with the privacy expert Todd McNutt when we return. And then in the last segment of the broadcast, we will be taking your phone calls on any of the topics we talked about today. And we hope that you'll take a few minutes to. Let me just go ahead and give you the number here very quickly, 866-372-7234, 866-372.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony Perkins and also Russ Jones. Again, Russ Jones is attending his 40th reunion. I didn't know he was that old. But anyway, Russ, that's why Russ isn't with us today, and I'm glad to be here. Well, let's jump into our next segment here. In recent years, the public sector has expressed concerns with how Silicon Valley handles our data, our elections, and our speech. Now there's a new concern. Our faces. In just the past few weeks, critics assailed Amazon for selling facial recognition technology to local police departments and Facebook for how it gained consent from Europeans to identify people in their photos. Joining us now is Todd McNutt. He's an author and privacy expert. He recently authored a book called Other People's Secrets, Life Unredacted. Todd, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
Well, you're going to be with us here for a little while for this segment and then the next segment, and we're going to give our listeners an opportunity to mull this information that you're about to present over in their minds, and hopefully we'll have some good conversation about that in our last segment. Well, so first of all, tell us about where this facial recognition technology stands right now and how it's being used.
Facial recognition has kind of slipped under the wire. People haven't paid that much attention to it. I guess what really brought it to the forefront is the iPhone 10, when the X came out this past year, and they had the facial recognition instead of the fingerprint to unlock the phone. It really took the center stage. But a lot of people don't realize at the Super Bowl in 2002, Microsoft was demoing to the federal government their system for facial recognition and looking for wanted people that were in the audience at the Super Bowl game in 2002.
Well, I hope their facial recognition technology works well, because I would think that there's a pretty good chance that if it's not working so well, it might misidentify someone who's, say, wanted for a felony warrant, and they go get that person and put that person through all sorts of things. Is that a possibility, or has that happened?
That is something that is a major concern to people like myself that are in the business of speaking out against it, is the concern that during the TV series, America's Most Wanted, they bragged about all the people. They still brag about the 8,000 people they put behind bars. What they don't talk to you about is the five times that many people whose lives they destroyed with false arrests and false accusations against them. And that's a documented fact, by the way. The FBI has even admitted that there were five times as many people arrested as who were actually charged with crimes based on that show's tip line. And, you know, I've got to say the facial recognition right now, some of them are touting 97% to 98% accuracy, but I have not honestly seen one that was more than 92% accurate. Well, that 8% that's not accurate, when you look at that for just the United States, we could have the entire cities of New York, Chicago, and Dallas-Fort Worth area all arrested falsely under false accusations because of misrecognition by a system. The population of those cities could all go to jail for it.
Well, what are some of the fail-safes that they claim are built in or that are built into some of these systems? And that's part one of the question. The other part is, where is this typically used? Say, if you're out walking around, driving around, out and about, where might these systems be used, and how do you know that they're there?
Right now, they're just starting to use them in law enforcement, and they're just testing them. All of the borders at international parts of the airports now are using them. As part of the thing, if you leave the U.S. or come into the U.S., you will go through a facial recognition scan. And I think that's great. I mean, it's a great starting point for it in law enforcement. I don't have a problem if they get to a point where a police officer has a device that when he walks up to a car, he can say, please look at the camera, and he snaps his picture, and in a few seconds it comes back and tells him who the driver is, and then he knows positively who you are, and he has your driver's license on his screen. I think that'd be great. But what bothers me about it is that same officer deciding that, okay, I'm going to sit here on the side of the road and scan people as they drive by until I find somebody I want to pull over. And that's always a possibility.
So, Todd, what are some we've been talking about facial recognition. What are some of the other sort of common methods that folks may not be aware of where their information is being collected every day?
excuse me, a little
choked
up there.
I choked you up there.
Yeah, you choked me up. actually, one of the biggest ones that people miss is the credit bureaus. I get a kick out of Experian. They run that commercial all the time that says they're going to give you a look at three different levels of the dark web if you sign up for their privacy protection program.
Right.
And here's a little reality check for you. And I've been in this business, the information business, for over 23 years, and I know this to be a fact. Experian and the other major credit bureaus will sell your Social Security number more times today than the dark web will in the next year.
Well, that could be a bit problematic. Well, Todd, we're talking with Todd McNutt. He's an author and privacy expert. On the other side of the break, Todd, I want to ask you a little bit about you've got some interesting background in terms of some of the folks that you have trained to avoid being recognized. And then we also want to talk about some practical things that our listeners can do to protect their own information and their privacy, some reasonable and simple things that can be done. And then we'll also be taking your calls. Go ahead and jot down the number. It's 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You're listening to Washington Watch. This is Eben Fowler sitting in for both Russ Jones and Tony Perkins this afternoon. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you ready to vote? Do you know the candidates and their platforms? There are important races happening for the Senate, the House, and many state and local primaries. Determining the right candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin and political rhetoric. Each elected official is given a platform to make a difference, and he or she will either be part of the problem or part of the solution when it comes to preserving and protecting your religious freedom, family values, and the dignity of human life. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with our 2018 Voter Guide. Go to frcaction.org/voterguide to view the guide, election dates, and so much more. It's important to be informed when you enter the voting booth. This is your time to be a part of the solution for America. So, don't be silent. Be sure to vote. Again, that's frcaction.org/voterguide.
Have you ever had doubts about your freedom to believe? All of us want to be free, especially when it comes to practicing our faith, which is so fundamental to who we are. In America, we tend to take religious freedom for granted, but millions of people around the world aren't so blessed. When basic freedoms are denied to us, the natural human reaction is one of anger. It is no surprise, then, that in countries where religious freedom is suppressed, violence soon follows. Today, we often see this violence spill into other countries in the form of terrorism. This is why religious freedom and national security go hand in hand. As religious freedom is cultivated worldwide, and as security and economic development occur along with it, the United States' national security interests are advanced. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/national security. That's frc.org/national security.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
We're back with Washington Watch on this Friday afternoon. Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. Let me give you a couple of social media kinds of things here. FRC.org, FRC.org. That's the website to get more information about the Family Research Council and the great work that they're doing on behalf of all of us in the nation's capital. At T. Perkins is Tony's Twitter handle. Mine is at Eben Fowler. That's EbenFowler. And let's go back to Todd McNutt. Again, he's an author and privacy expert. I said expert earlier, didn't I? And he recently authored a book called Other People's Secrets, Life Unredacted. Todd, tell us about what that book's all about.
That book kind of starts out where I did 23 years ago in the information industry and my disillusionment and how I got my eyes opened up to the reality of the privacy in the information industry is an absolute joke. They literally laugh at it and mock it. So I got out of the business and started telling people how to protect their privacy in spite of the big companies and the things they could do to avoid having their privacy sold on a daily basis as much as they could.
Now, you told me something interesting offline earlier before we went on the broadcast about some of the folks that you have taught, undercover police officers or undercover detectives. Tell us a little bit about that work, if you can.
I've had undercover police and federal agents, and I've had media people, interviewers such as yourself and TV personalities come to me and say, how can we protect our privacy? And I give them the same advice I would give anybody. One of the biggest things to protect your privacy is that most people are concerned about is me. Somebody walking up to my front door, knocking on my door, ringing my doorbell, and I go open the door, and this is somebody that I would really rather not have known where I live. So one of the quickest ways to fix yourself is to go get a mail suite. Now, don't get a P.O. box because they don't work. Those are public record because they're federally subsidized. You have to go to a mail suite like FedEx store or something like that and rent a P.O. box. have all your utility bills sent to that box with a postal forwarding order. What it does is gives the appearance that you moved from where you are to that address. Now, when I do a search for information on you to try and search for you and hunt for you, the records that the utility companies report is the mailing address on an account, not where the utility is actually hooked up. They consider that to be trade secret information for their company.
Interesting.
So that step alone will take care of most of the information. And I've even told people, they say, well, what about my driver's license? You can do it on your driver's license because the state doesn't require you to put the physical address where you live. You simply have to have the physical address where they can contact you.
Now, here's the big question. If you get the P.O. box, does your junk mail go away? Probably not.
No, but it goes to the mailbox, and they've usually got a trash can there that you can throw it away before you even leave. So
There we go. Let me ask you a couple other questions, too. Facebook's facial recognition feature, and I think anybody who's used Facebook, and I don't really use it very much, but it's kind of a waste of time. But, you see pictures, and it pops up, and you see these squares around the faces of people in photographs, and it takes a guess at who they are. Talk about that, and are there any dangers to that?
Actually, the biggest danger is I put them in the category with the DNA test. The DNA test, they've gotten American people to unwittingly submit their DNA to these companies who are cataloging it, databasing it, and then selling it. And you're actually paying for the privilege. Facebook's doing the same thing. The gentleman, I'm not going to call him a gentleman, the piece of human trash that went in and shot up the newspaper place over in Maryland last week,
yes,
the week before,
yeah.
He didn't carry any ID on him. So they took his photograph and ran it through facial recognition. And the database that they came back with that ID'd him was, of course, Facebook.
Interesting.
Because he had a Facebook page, and they found his Facebook page and found his posts and his rants and things that he had posted on there, but they facial ID'd him through there. So, I guess it's one of those things. They keep talking about their opt-in and opt-out and all this and getting permission to do it. I got news for people. There are catch things. You're using their system for free.
Right.
I used to get, when I was an information expert early on, I used to get called in and asked. I actually testified in a couple of court cases for corporations who were being sued by employees because the employer was reading their emails. And the position in the industry is, and it's mine, I have to agree with it, if you're using my internet and my computer, even on your break time, that's my internet. And if you make a threat to the White House or anything else, they're going to trace it back to my network. So if you're on my network, I have every right to know what you're doing on it and who you're communicating with and how.
Well, certainly. And that's typically, computer use policies at most companies let you know that that is the case. They certainly have the right to monitor.
That being the case, if you're on Facebook's system, they're going to win in a courtroom with the same case. They're going to take the case to the judge and say, you know what? Yes, we do facial recognition on these people. They're using our system, and they're using it for free. And just like this guy on the East Coast, when he shot up the place, we helped identify him.
There you go. Well, tell us what China's doing with facial recognition.
They're doing, pardon the association there, but it is scary what they're doing. They can literally, they claim that with their supercomputer they've got over there, that they're running their database through, they can scan the entire population of China in 2 seconds. So every 2 seconds, they scan their population wherever they are, looking for anybody that's wanted by their government.
Oh, that is a bit scary, I must say.
What scares me about it is that the U.S. is always trying to beat China at everything they do.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, when is I mean, you know, I've got to look at it. I have no awe for any of the people in government or that. They've got a tough job to do, sorting out the bad guys from the good guys. But at the same time, when Department of Homeland Security says that for my safety, I have to let them have my privacy completely, I have an issue with that because I disagree completely. I've been in this business for too many years for them to tell me that and me to believe it.
Well, Todd, let me just take a moment here to give our phone number, 866-372-7234, if you'd like to call. I have a couple of questions for you if you'd like to call in. First of all, what concerns do you have about the information that's gathered through these various means that Todd's been talking about, social media, Facebook, and so on? And then the other question relates back to an earlier segment. Did you watch any of the hearing yesterday with Peter Strzok? And what did you think? So the phone number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Love to hear from you. Well, Todd, the title of your book, Other People's Secrets, reminds me, and I don't know if you've ever seen the film The Lives of Others. Have you seen that film about 1984 East Berlin and kind of what it was like back then?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, I thought maybe that was a take on that film. It's very interesting, and it talks about East Berlin was a police state,
right?
And that film gives you a pretty good sense of what that was like. Well, let me turn the corner here for just a moment. Tech companies apparently are calling for government regulation, which seems a little bit strange. Isn't that kind of rare, and do they have an ulterior motive there? And by the way, we've got a bunch of calls coming in, but go ahead and answer that question.
I do think there's an ulterior motive. I think they're wanting to play it close to the hip and keep the technology for themselves, bottom line. I think they want to be the ones that have it and nobody else does.
So how would the government regulation impact that?
Well, what they do is they end up restricting the big corporations so that if they're going to sell access to their databases, they can only sell it to government entities mm-hmm. or to each other.
I see. Okay.
And that keeps you and I from being able to use the technology for our own business purposes.
Very interesting. And you had mentioned earlier something about this new iPhone, the iPhone X. Explain that in a little bit more detail.
Well, the iPhone 10, they got rid of the button on the front of the phone. Mm-hmm. You know, for the I don't know if you're familiar with iPhones. I've carried
them
for a number of years.
I'm looking at mine right now. It's not a 10, though.
And you've got the button on the front that you can do the fingerprint thing, and you can hold your finger on it, and it'll unlock the phone?
Yes.
And the new one doesn't have the button on it. You pick the phone up and hold it up in front of you, and that activates the camera, and the camera scans your face and unlocks the phone.
There you go. Interesting. Well, we have a couple of callers online here. I've got Brad from Oklahoma. He wants to ask a question about Minority Report. Brad, thanks for calling Washington Watch.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I love your show. I was curious. I heard that they have a new system. It's like Minority Report, where they like the movie Minority Report, where they can actually pinpoint a crime down to the actual person that's about to commit the crime beforehand, and they can, and I heard that even China was on to something like this also.
So, Todd, what do you think about that?
It's absolutely true. China is already doing it, and the U.S. government is experimenting with it. They aren't actually able to do it before you commit the crime yet, but what they're doing is they're actually studying facial recognition. They shot up the reporters. They will go back and study all the surveillance footage around the area there of him going to that building, and they will study his facial expressions and his face from as far back as they can gather data, and they will study it for the purpose of being able to tell that if I walk down the street and I'm on my way to the bank, and I just got off a bad phone call with somebody, and I'm mad, that they're going to interpret that I have ill will towards somebody in the bank that I'm heading toward, and they could stop me and arrest me for it.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Brad, thanks so much for calling. Tanya is on the line from Kansas. Tanya has a question about credit card use. Tanya, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, I have two questions. I'll make it real quick. I cover up my code on the back of my card. And how safe does that keep me? I cover it up with a special sticker. And then I also cover up my camera portal, you know, my camera hole on my iPad and my computer. Does that keep me safe from people being able to see me?
Yes, it does. It does a lot of good for both of those. Do a lot of good. I wish more people would take both of those precautions. And I say that. And I have to laugh at myself because I've had a couple of people that have been in my office recently that they look and they go, yeah, you are some kind of privacy expert. You do not practice most of what you preach. And I tend not to, but a lot of it is, in all honesty, a lot of it is I guess, for lack of a better way, I'm kind of baiting to see what happens, if that makes any sense. I'm kind of leaving myself out there as the guinea pig, so to speak, because I'm kind of fair game. I'm kind of high profile, so I'm kind of hoping that the people are looking for someone like me, and when they do it, then I see what they're doing, and I can report on it. So,
very good.
Okay. There's one thing I also do with my cards is I keep them in a little metal box that I, you know, just the size of a cigarette pack or something. And then there's also plumber's tape that is foil that they put over the decks of heating vents and stuff.
Yes.
And does that protect my cards? Because I think it does.
That is much safer than those little sleeves that they sell at the store, because I did some testing. I've done a lot of my book is about RFID technology and how failed it is. And we tested a half a dozen different sleeves. And on some cards in the sleeve, it would work, and other cards would be put in the sleeve, and it would read right through them.
Very interesting. Well, Tanya, thank you so much for calling. I'm going to jump to our next listener. James is calling also from Kansas. He's got a question about ID protection companies.
Yeah. Todd, first of all, thank you for helping the rest of us to be more knowledgeable of what's really going on, all the shenanigans and everything. And so my question is,
you're welcome.
A lot recommend Xander Insurance, that they have an alternative to LifeLock and some of these other companies. In your opinion, is there one that truly does protect us, and are the others a scam, or is there any that you can recommend?
I actually use LifeLock. And I've been using LifeLock for several years now. I like them. They're great. They've caught two or three instances for me. And that's one of the real reasons that I don't feel as concerned about leaving myself vulnerable like I do, is because there have been things that have come up over the last few years that they've actually caught and flagged, and I've known when my security was being breached and people were trying to get to me through them. So I haven't really studied the one that Dave Ramsey did, but I do know Dave Ramsey well enough to know that if he's recommending them, they're probably really good.
Very good. Well, James, thanks for calling. Todd, we are about 30 seconds out here from being finished with a Friday edition of Washington Watch. Thank you for taking a full half hour out of your day to help us learn about some of these things. Appreciate it very much.
Can I leave with one thought?
One thought, real quick.
It's all about information. Who has it, who can get it, and who controls it.
Very good. Well, thanks, everybody, for joining us this afternoon for this edition of Washington Watch. Tony will be back on Monday, and we look forward to having you listen once again.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.